We start today with Philip Shaw, Senior Advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Philip, you're on WGN. How are you today?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
I think we're all doing well. It looks like this debt ceiling crisis is going to pass. Do you agree with that prediction of mine?
I agree. I think it's going to pass. You know, since 1960, we've raised the debt ceiling 76 times. So we've gotten pretty good at making these things go through, and the end result would be catastrophic if they didn't come to some sort of an agreement. The problem I see is they might just agree to kick the can down the road, if you will, make this an issue again in the fall, make this an issue again a year from today, but I do think the current one will pass.
I was reading David Brooks's piece in the New York Times today, and he said that, you know, when you get to $32 trillion, you're getting close to a point at which this is going to become insurmountable, especially with Social Security being stressed for funds down the road as well. At some point, even if we don't like the idea of using the debt ceiling as a negotiating tool, we've got to start spending less or paying down on this debt. Do you agree with all of that?
Yeah, we absolutely need to. The current U.S. debt's almost $32 trillion, which means per taxpayer, that's about $248,000 per taxpayer. That is becoming an insurmountable amount of debt, and it's becoming a real drag on our economy, on the government's ability to spend and manage its own finances. And I agree with you. I don't think the debt ceiling is a great way to have a negotiating tool or a conversation, but we definitely need to get the spending in control across the board for the government.
I was looking at the amount that we pay just on interest on the debt. For, you know, how you've got a mortgage, forget about whittling away on the principal. You just got to at least not get underwater with the interest that you pay. And I don't see it, but I think it was, $900 billion. I'll find the number again in a minute. But what do you say about all of this? What should we know about this debt ceiling generally?
You know, I don't think it's a great risk that it would actually that they won't come to an impact pass on this. They'll come to some sort of extension on the debt ceiling. But for people who are concerned about it, a lot of what we're advising for folks we're talking to is, make sure we're boosting the emergency savings. Make sure that we have a financial plan in place that, you know, even if there was some short-term, you know, turmoil in the markets because of a debt ceiling issue, that it's not going to sink you financially tomorrow. So it's just making sure that we're doing a lot of things to prepare for that, a lot of things to make sure that, you know, you have some stability regardless of what happens.
So how many months' worth of expenses should I have in the bank then?
You know, it depends a bit on really what your expenses look like and also what your employment looks like. You know, for a lot of folks, if you have a pretty stable employer, you work for the government, you're a teacher, you have a pretty stable outlook, you might not need as much as somebody who has, you know, high bills, high debt, somebody who has a, you know, a sales job, or someone who, you know, in a recession might be at risk of losing it. We actually have a calculator on our website to help folks walk through some of this. It's a great tool to look at for yourself.
So what are the inputs, like my income, my debt, those sorts of things?
Yeah, and also, you know, income, debt, how much, you know, short-term other goals do we have? You know, I know folks are saying, look, you know, I have a child getting married in 6 months. What should I be doing with it? And that's a short-term goal. You know, that's something we should be setting aside for.
I guess the range is half a year, somewhere around there. I mean, boy, that's a lot, though. Who's got half a year's worth of cash in the bank to float themselves if they suddenly lose or see diminished income? Is 6 months about the right number?
For most people, it's 3 to 6 months, depending on, again, some of the factors we were talking about.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay. Well, by the way, here's my advice. If you've got a wedding coming up and that's a short-term expense, buy a ladder, okay? Weddings are insanely expensive. They are too expensive now. Philip, your thoughts.
I couldn't agree with you more. I have a friend getting married coming up here very shortly. They took an interesting approach. They went international. gets your attendee count down quite a bit.
Oh, well, there you go. So in other words, if you do get married in Spain, while that will be more expensive to get to Spain and stuff like that, you're not going to have to buy as many dinners and drinks for everybody, are you?
It's a little bit different having 20 guests versus 200.
My son got invited to a wedding, and it's a four-day cruise. So that's nice, but I don't know. Do you want to go on a four-day cruise, honey? That's the wedding. It's funny how these things are being set up these days. Okay.
Yeah, but when we think about something like the debt ceiling and any kind of these short-term, you know, market issues, that's really what it's all got to revolve around. It's got to be, what is my plan for my money? And making sure that you're taking accountability and managing, you know, your own finances for your situation.
I'm really interested in that calculator, and it's sitting right there at goldstonefinancialgroup.com, goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Philip Shaw is a senior advisor there. Nice to talk to you today, Philip. Thanks for your thoughts.
Yep. Thanks again, John.
Stay well. In Montana, it's official. They banned TikTok. They've banned TikTok in Montana. Bree Fowler from CNET, how are they able to do that? Can they?
Well, it's going to be tricky, and technically it doesn't go into effect until January 1st, but the governor's bill yesterday. What it would do is prohibit companies like Apple and Google from putting TikTok in their app stores, things like that. From a technical perspective, this is going to be very, very tricky. And from a legal perspective, there's definitely going to be challenges.
Because if I'm in Idaho, I have it on my phone. If I walk into Montana, does it know that I'm there? Or if I'm in Montana, can I walk to Idaho and suddenly it would populate back in my apps?
I mean, once it's on your phone, it's on your phone. So all of those TikTok users in Montana, it's not going to disappear. It's not going to get bricked. This would just make companies take it out of the app store. You know, even that is very tricky. Even if you're in Montana, you could use a VPN or some other kind of location masking device and still download it. But I mean, this is more about politics than it is about actual technology.
What's the politics at play here?
Well, the politics is dealing with China and the fact that there actually are national security concerns with TikTok and with it collecting the data of Americans. But, you know, something like this really isn't going to do a whole lot to actually stop that.
And why Montana? It's a red state. Is this a political thing? And will other states be following their lead?
It's possible other states, especially red states, could follow their lead. At the national level, the Ban TikTok movement has been kind of bipartisan, actually. You've got Democrats that are pushing legislation that would do this as well. You know, Montana, they're kind of out there doing their own thing in a lot of ways. But, you know, state legislatures can pass what they want. That said, there will be court challenges.
I want to ask you about the AI testimony this week, but just one last question about that. Is it clear that the relationship between TikTok and the Chinese government is dangerous to us?
Well, it's really unknown, and I guess that's what people worry about. Companies in America have a lot of freedom from oversight that companies in China don't have. The Chinese government could step in and take the information from TikTok. It could take the data that's being collected, just like it could with any other company. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a democratic society. But, you know, there's also nothing stopping the Chinese government from just buying up data from American data brokers, too, that's being collected by all kinds of social media.
OpenAI CEO Sam Altman testified before the Senate this week. What did he say?
Well, this was very different from the TikTok hearing that was a month or two ago. It was actually very constructive, and the senators actually asked a lot of good questions. He actually said that he would be open to regulation, to setting up, you know, licensing requirements when it comes to these massively powerful AI systems, and that, you know, maybe a new government agency could actually step in and keep tabs on things. You know, he, like a lot of the people in Congress, is worried about disinformation being spread, propaganda, things like that. And, you know, just the overall accuracy of AI, it's not perfect yet. And when you're using it at a massive scale, you know, that can cause problems that no one intended.
I'm less worried about the inaccuracy of it now, which we've all seen and heard about, and more curious, maybe worried about how it would be used to generate images, videos, pictures of things that did not exist. We already see some of that.
Yeah, AI is being used to do that. But, you know, when it comes to mis and disinformation, you know, what if my mom asks ChatGPT for information about the prescription drug she's taking, and it just fills in the blanks with what it thinks might be right? Sure. That could cause problems as well.
Tom Hanks this week said that he thinks it's quite possible that he'll be making movies long after his death. They've already got the sort of data points from him when he made Polar Express, and he said they could capture his voice, his likeness, and he could star in AI-generated movies forever.
Well, I would hope that copyright and you know, things like that would cover that. I mean, you know, even you and I, there's probably enough voice samples out there to recreate us years down the road as well.
One last thing. Google is going to start deleting accounts that have not been used for 2 years. Is that right?
That is true. It's not so much worried about digital clutter as it is about security. Accounts that have kind of been left to go to seed are more susceptible to cyber attackers that could take them over, use them for fraud, you know, phishing attacks, things like that. So if you have let a Google Gmail account or any other kind of Google account go inactive for more than 2 years, you might want to take a look at it. This isn't going to start until at least December, so you've got some time.
But the pictures that are on it or anything I've saved on that will be lost if I don't either use that account or save it in some other fashion, right?
Right. And Google has said it's going to be sending those accounts emails. If you have a backup email address set for those accounts, those notifications will be going there as well. I mean, I can think of people I know that have Gmail accounts where they forgot the password, or they, you know, set them up years ago and then, you know, moved over to a new one just because of junk mail or storage space. So, you know, if you've got something kind of in the closet back there, the digital closet, you might want to take note.
Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET. Nice to talk to you, Bree. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Thanks for having me.
Christopher Zara joins us now, the editor at Fast Company. This is an interesting bit of research here, a new Squarespace survey about our tech habits. Christopher, welcome to the show. It reveals what?
Well, hey, John, thanks for having me on. So, yeah, this is kind of an interesting survey from Squarespace. It was really looking at tech use among different generations. And I think the most interesting finding was that the younger generation, Gen Z in particular, really showed an interest in taking a break from their phones. About 50% of respondents that were in the Gen Z category indicated that they wanted to take a break from their digital devices. On the flip side of that, only 20% of baby boomers, the older respondents, said that they were looking to take a break. So I think the conventional wisdom, it sort of flips conventional wisdom in the sense that it was really the younger respondents that are feeling just a little bit too connected right now, whereas the older tech users seem like they just can't get enough. So we thought it was an interesting finding, so we wrote a story about it. Our reporter, Shalene Gupta, wrote a story about it for Fast Company. We write quite a bit about the generational differences in tech use, and this was just struck us as a very curious finding.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'm inclined to wonder if maybe the reason for that finding is that baby boomers are on their phones less and therefore feel less of a need to disassociate themselves from it. But I don't know if that's true, because I think there's plenty of us in that category who are always attached to the damn devices, you know?
Yeah, I think that that actually could be one of the reasons. The study doesn't get too deep into the screen time of each generation. I think you have a point that could be one of the reasons. I also think that it speaks to the idea of who is, like, how much is too much for any individual consumer. I think there, like, you can go into a restaurant, for example, on any given day, and you'll clearly see that the phone usage is not limited to one generation. And you can see an older couple, for example, will be sitting on their phones throughout the entire meal. And that's not unusual to see. So I think that what we're seeing here with this particular finding is that there is it's the younger generation that is feeling over-connected. Now, whether or not that's because they are on their phones more is a good question, but they do seem to feel like they want to take the break. And I think that that's an important finding, because I think it speaks to the burnout, the tech burnout that a lot of younger people are feeling right now.
Well, how are we defining Gen Z in this study? Is it like 6 to 20 or something like that?
Typically it's 24. I think it's about 24 and under.
Yeah.
They usually have the cutoff right around 20. It's right around 24 at present, I think. And then if you get a little older than that, it's millennials. And then, of course, I'm Gen X, so that's why I'm kind of neutral in this whole thing.
Yeah, you're perfect. Well, I also think it's such a sad scene when you are at a restaurant and you see a couple my age, or maybe a table of six or more, say, younger people, and they're looking at their phones at what should be an inherently social place, a restaurant, a bar, and everybody's got their nose in the phone. And that cannot be healthy for us.
I couldn't agree with you more, and it's especially when you're talking about it's something in particular about a restaurant it's really the time that you should be sitting down and having, if you can't sit down and have the conversation for that hour that you're sitting down and eating the meal, I don't know what else to say except that, like, there's something especially social about restaurants. Bars, maybe, you know, there's loud music and people want to be on their phone because they can't talk anyway because the music is too loud. But a restaurant in particular, I agree with you, just feels like it should be inherently social if there's multiple people at the table.
Well, along those lines, didn't part of the research describe the choice between going online or going out with friends or going outdoors, and people are more inclined to stay on their device rather than socialize or get fresh air?
That's correct. This was another finding in the study where it found that people, when asked what they would go for a whole day without doing, more people said they would go a whole day without going outside than a whole day without being on a website. In other words, they really didn't feel they could give up the internet for a full day, whereas going outside, they could kind of give that up a little bit easier. It was an easier choice for them. So again, it just speaks to, on the one sense, we're burned out and we want to take a break from our phones. On the flip side, we're kind of attached to it. Like, we feel so lost without the technology.
And, you know, if you're if you're over a certain age, and I don't know where that age is, over 30, over 40 something, but your clay's a little harder. You know, you've already been formed. You've learned about yourself and social engagement. I do worry about people who, at the age of 16 or 17, have grown up with those things in their hands, and they can't detach from it. And it's also sucking some of their confidence or their personality away. That is not a trivial concern, I would guess.
It's not. There are a lot of really smart researchers looking at this very thing. I think the jury is still out, because we're talking about an age group that's younger, and we're talking about a technology that, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't been around that long. I think there is now some pretty good research about its impact on mental health and depression and anxiety. It seems more and more we're finding the studies that confirm that there is unfortunately a negative impact on the child development in terms of their mental health and their how they view themselves. So, yeah, I think there is a little bit of a disturbing trend there when you look at the research.
And yet smartphones and the internet, greatest invention of all time. I mean, so here I am focusing on the negative. Does anybody does anybody weigh it? Where are the scales of justice on our devices?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that, you know, we're going to probably be writing these history books for you know, decades, and as far as like the what the good versus the bad. I look at, sometimes you can, you know, look at technology as being like the actual definition of technology is something that you can remember when it was invented. And so, like, you know, for my generation, like, I've always had a television set in the house. I don't think about how television, you know, impacted my development growing up. And yet, you know, a generation older than mine can clearly remember not having a TV. So there were the same concerns about television. There were the same concerns about, automatic, the cameras that you could walk around on the streets when those things came out, personal handheld cameras. Everyone thought privacy was over. Mm. And, you know, now that kind of seems quaint, 120 years ago.
I've read a little bit about this, and I know actually radio was not seen as a virtuous development when it first came out. It was pulling people away from more serious things. And I'd say radio is pretty innocuous compared to some of these other either threats to democracy or
that's true. And then advertisers discovered it, what a powerful tool it could be. And that's what sort of changed the world there. I mean, once advertisers realized they could pump a message into your living room through a radio, then it was game over.
Speaking of which, I have to do a commercial now. So we're ending this conversation, Christopher.
Yeah, okay.
Christopher Zara joins us, an editor at Fast Company. Very interesting study, though. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Christopher Zara, by the way, from their study, 62% of respondents agreed that the flexibility of smartphones outweighs the downsides of always being accessible. The upside, 62% say greater than the downside. On the Wintrust Business Lunch, more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new estimate from the U.S. Census Bureau shows Chicago lost about 81,000 people from 2020 to 2022. That's just under 3% of its population. Even with the decline, Chicago remains the country's third most populous city after New York City and Los Angeles. Houston is fourth. As of July 2022, Chicago's population was estimated at 2,665,039. During the same period, Illinois lost more than 230,000 people, or 1.8% of its population. The Chicago Metro drove most of that decline. The Metro covers 14 counties, including Cook, the Collar Counties, and parts of Indiana and Wisconsin. An apartment and retail development across from Wrigley Field has been sold for a big loss. Cranes reports the property at 1025 West Addison sold for $100 million in April, which is about $80 million less than it cost to build. The seven-story building includes apartments, restaurants, a movie theater, and bowling alley. The development opened in 2019 and then was hit by the pandemic, which was cited as the chief reason for the loss. The pandemic shut down Wrigley Field and deprived retail tenants of customers. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Mm-hmm, and it's a busy couple of days on our food calendar. Lots to celebrate, which I will tell you about after thanking the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, today is National Cheese Soufflé Day, National No Dirty Dishes Day, tomorrow is National Devil's Food Cake Day, National Pizza Party Day, and
we are kicking off the 8th annual Chicago Food Truck Fest in Daly Plaza underneath the iconic Picasso statue.
Ken Meyer is in charge of food trucks. He is commissioner of the Chicago Department of Business Affairs, and every Friday is Food Truck Friday?
Yes, we host the Food Truck Festival every Friday starting tomorrow through October 6th.
What time?
11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
How many trucks?
We host anywhere from 8 to 12 food trucks.
What kind of food?
It's a wide variety of cuisine. It can change from week to week. You know, we'll have tacos, barbecue, pizza, gumbo, just a whole wide variety of food.
And if someone has a food truck and wants to get in on this, is it too late?
Oh, no, no. For any of our food truck operators that are listening, I always encourage them to go to chicago.gov/foodtruckfest. They can actually sign up and pick a Friday they would like to join us down in Daly Plaza.
There are not as many people working in the loop as pre-pandemic, but Meyer says the food trucks are a lure.
Absolutely. You know, some food trucks have followers. They know that their food trucks will be on Daly Plaza every Friday. And, you know, the loop is certainly a different kind of a comeback, let's say, from pre-pandemic with, you know, the hybrid of office workers. But on Fridays, we get tourists, we get visitors coming in from Chicago. We'll get Chicagoans who are working from home that decide to come down to the loop. So it's a nice activation for the loop in the Central Business District.
And if you have a favorite food truck that you like to follow,
they can always go to chicago.gov/foodtruckfest, and we list every week which trucks will participate on that given Friday.
So the food trucks are back tomorrow. Where is that again, Lyle?
In the loop.
Thanks, bro. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Jason Lesnevich is the Director of Cultural Tourism at Choose Chicago. They've got a program or a campaign right now encouraging us to experience live the performing arts. Hey, Jason, you're on WGN. What is this program?
Yes, thank you. It's Go Live Chicago. It is a campaign and a program that we developed with the city's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events and other organizations in the performing arts sector to really highlight, you know, live events, having people return to live events. The creative is really to challenge you to get out of your home and to remind you that there's nothing like live theater, music, dance, comedy, spoken word, what have you. You know, we really want people to return to our venues. We've noticed that the industry in general has not recovered as quickly as other industries across Chicago. And so this dedicated campaign is really to hopefully lift up the community and drive ticket sales across our venues.
So these aren't new events, venues, or shows per se, but rather, hey, this show's in town. This dance theater is dancing. The opera is up and running. Come on down and take advantage of what we have in place.
That is true. Yes, absolutely. You know, there's great events, theater and music nightly on our stages across the city from downtown throughout our neighborhoods. And, you know, it's an industry that's, you know, seen, you know, slow ticket sales, losing subscribers, shorter runs of shows. And so, you know, really want to encourage people to get out there and support your local theater or go see a new show or, you know, go to the venue that you love for small concerts that you haven't been in a while. It supports so many people beyond just the people on stages as well.
We just bought tickets for a jazz show downtown, and I don't know how many of you have lately thought, hey, the weather's getting better. Let's come into the city and do one of these things. I say go see Big River at the Mercury Theater with our own Bob Kessler on the stage playing the clarinet and the harmonica. Before that show closes, go see Big River. The review on Channel 11 the other night was glowing for this. So go see this before it leaves. And so we're talking theater, we're talking music. Any specific things you'd like to highlight, Jason?
Yeah, Hubbard Street Dance has shows all weekend at the Harris. It's a great part of their summer series called Facets. One of the pieces is an ode to Frankie Knuckles, has a great house music connection, which Chicago is famous for. Dance Month is June. All of June is Dance Month, but there'll be a kickoff event at Navy Pier on June 3rd, a day-long performances out on their outdoor stage. West Side Story is coming to Lyric Opera June 2nd through the 25th. They play the score live with their orchestra and, of course, with their great performers on stage, just to name a few. CSO, the Symphony Orchestra, always has, you know, great performances throughout the week as well.
Okay, well then, in all of these, you sort of curated them at GoLiveChicago.org, right?
Yes, we did. That is the website. You know, we're always getting new show submissions, so it changes daily, but it'll be shows through June 30th right now.
GoLiveChicago.org. Hey, that's easy. GoLiveChicago.org. Jason Lesnevich, good. I'm glad you guys are doing this. The director of cultural tourism in the city. Nice to talk to you, Jason.
Thank you.